Things are getting physical at One Jets Drive. The Aaron Glenn era feels like it is really underway now. Plus, a new kicker in the mix and stock up, stock down. Thanks for joining us on the Flight Plan Podcast. Tim McMaster here along with Zach Rosenblatt. Give us likes, give us thumbs up, give us reviews. Now's the time to review right before the season starts. No better time to review. Zach, you're back into the groove now after a week plus. How are you feeling?
Feel good. Yeah, I haven't had to take the same hits that the guys in practice have, so I just can complain from atop my perch that it's really hot out, which is what we do as reporters, because it's been humid as shit the last few days. But yeah, it's been an interesting camp. I still don't know that, like, I don't know if I'll have a great feel of how they'll compare to like other teams and stuff until we see them against the Giants in the joint practice. But it's been a well-run camp, and we're going to get into it obviously this episode, but one of the most interesting things is the level of shots this group has been taking at the previous regime. Like, it's every press conference for a guy who was on the team last year, and they haven't really even couched it, like, no disrespect to the previous staff. They've said these quotes without, like, you know, backtracking and really, like, giving detailed answers about the ways they like this camp better than the past camps. So it's that part's been interesting. But yeah, there's been some intriguing standouts. I think it's a young team that is going to go through its bumps this year. Like, the offense has probably been inconsistent, but they've shown some flashes, and it's been a fun camp. There hasn't been that many days with fans yet, so I'm curious. I think the next one is coming up either tomorrow or Friday, so it'll be cool to have them back out there too.
So let's get into that. Bashing of the previous regime, but just like this regime, because we talked a little bit about last week and the structure and the officials that were there and some of that sort of stuff. But this week it became clear that this is going to be a physical training camp. But I think I saw that you tweeted at one point that, or maybe it was in one of your stories, that just through the first few days this week, it was the most physical practices you've ever covered in the NFL.
Yeah, I mean, to what I can remember, like, maybe there was a, like, Joe Judge practice where he was doing, like, an actual Oklahoma drill or something. But, yeah, I mean, the Jets, especially under Saleh, but even before him, like, I mean, and it's not just Saleh. It is around the NFL where there's just, like, not as much hitting in training camp anymore because all these teams are scared of injuries, and that's what it was with Saleh. They were not tackling to the ground. It was all, hitting above the waist and not even, like, that hard a lot of the time. And so on Monday, you know, even before you even get to the team drills, we get the one-on-one tackling drill where it's ball carrier versus defender, and the ball carrier has to get by the defender, and the defender can tackle them. And so there were some really cool battles that you saw.
It's like a classic high school football drill, I feel like, when I used to cover high school football. You'd see that every kid. Totally.
And those kind of drills are the ones where the players get really hyped up either side gets really hyped up for a win. It gets very competitive. And then another thing, like, we've seen it to a degree the last couple of years, mostly in joint practices, but the O-line versus D-line one-on-ones is also very fun because you really see, you know, the strength of a defensive lineman if he's able to power through an O-lineman, or, you know, the offensive lineman that are able to stifle that. You know, there were some obvious stand. I mean, Quinton Williams was someone who was dominant in those reps. You kind of expect that, but, you know, seeing the offensive line, I thought, did pretty well in those. And so that was cool. And then even just in the 11-on-11 drills, seeing guys being able to actually hit that, like, allowed certain players to emerge, like a Malachi Moore, who we'll get into, like guys who are more built for those type of physicality than, like, when you're not allowed to hit at all. Like, you see those kind of guys emerge, whereas you normally would have to wait until, like, the preseason or even the regular season to do that. But yeah, I don't, you know, knock on wood, I mean, not to pull a Saleh, but knock on wood, there hasn't really been any injuries outside of Gus Hartley.
I was going to say, that's the draw, but that's why teams don't do this, right? Is the fear, whether or not it's, you. I mean, injuries happen no matter what, but that's why, right? Because the fear of injuries.
Yeah, well, and Aaron Glenn directly addressed that. He's like, people have fear of injuries, but a lot of times running away from it is what leads to more guys getting hurt once like the hits come. So I think there's a balance. Like, it's not like they're doing hitting every day. They did hitting on Monday. Tuesday, there were still pads on, but they didn't really hit. So it was really only one day of, like, tackling, which, And I've been joking about this with people both around the team and around the league that I've talked to. It's like the questions that we were asking in the press conference, it was as if we'd never seen like an actual like football practice before, because we're like, so what was this thing you guys were doing where you're hitting it? It was amazing. Like, what were your thoughts on that? Like, every single question was just about, like, Aaron Glenn got like six questions about just allowing tackling in practice. And you think about when he came in as a player, it was two-a-days, Bill Parcells. Like, you play through injuries. If you don't, then you're have a chance of losing out in your starting job. Like, there was, you're getting worked to the, getting ground to the bone, and then the guys who can handle it were the ones that survived, and that's just not the way it is anymore. So, you know, Aaron Glenn is pushing a physical brand of football that's, especially on offense, running the ball, like, in the trenches. Like, you want to, you have to be able to take on hits, and you have to give them out. And then on defense, it's blitz, it's aggressive, it's attack, attack, attack. So, you know, as he keeps saying, like, if I don't practice this with the guys, and how can I expect them to be good at it when the season comes around? And so, you know, it's been a welcome change. I'm curious to see if it'll be like once a week or how often they're going to do these like intense practices. But it was fun. It was a lot of fun. It was one of the more fun practices to watch, because a lot of times in these practices, when it's so light, there's not hitting, it gets really boring standing out there. And I'm not trying to complain about my job, just like football practice on its own can get pretty boring when it's just regular drills, guys running from point A to point B, or just doing the very basics of drill work. When you throw this into the mix, these competitive periods that aren't even just team drills, like it's a lot of fun to watch, because the players are getting really into it too.
Yeah, I was about to say that's a good segue, because the one thing you wonder is, okay, this is a completely different approach. How will the players take it? Will they buy into it? Will they be complaining about the contact and this isn't how the NFL is right now? All that kind of thing. And it sounds like, to a man, the Jets are bought in, and not just on the physicality and the pushing, but just the, I think it was a quote you had from Garrett Wilson, attention to detail and just pushing these guys. And you mentioned, you know, slamming the old regime. One thing Garrett talked about was it's nice how critical they are of what he's doing, right? Like if his steps are off, Aaron Glenn is on him. If he drops the ball, they're on him. And he said he hadn't felt that since Ohio State, which, and I think it was multiple guys that mentioned college. Yeah. And it's crazy to think that like NFL players were getting more coaching and criticism in college than they would be in the NFL.
Yeah, you know, I think it says something that a lot of these guys, and maybe the ones that aren't here anymore are the ones that didn't want this, but they like want to be coached hard. They want to be held accountable. Even Elijah Vera Tucker, who is not someone to ever say anything controversial, he was like, you know, he's preaching physicality, but even more than that, he's preaching accountability, which, you know, is something I haven't really had in the NFL in a head coach. Like, he's basically saying Robert Saleh. Like, and I don't think anybody noticed he said it in a moment because it was so like casual. But yeah, I mean, there's something to be said about it. I think something to remember about not only this, like the way Saleh coached, but look at the roster the last few years. Like, it was a lot of older players, veterans who probably didn't want to be worked that hard. Guys were getting to rest anytime they wanted, or they were getting scheduled rest and all that stuff. And you get it to a degree, certain guys have earned that and all that stuff. But, you know, I push back on, they did, it was like a country club culture, but it was definitely a, you know, star players getting away with things, low effort, not being punished, or mistakes not being punished at practice. Like, you, something as simple as Jeremy Rucker had a false start on Monday and he was out the next play. Like, they pulled him. So like, yeah, you know, I covered the Joe Judge era where they made guys run laps when they had penalties. I don't think you need to do that, because that's pretty childish. Ultimately, that's like high school shit. But, you know, making it clear that penalties like that will not be acceptable. Like, the whole idea, they're like, there's good penalties and there's bad penalties. The good ones are like the aggressive ones where you get it out of the virtue of like you were trying to make a play. The bad ones are the ones where you're jumping off sides, you're lining up the wrong way, or you're doing something illegal that you should, like roughing, you know, a certain roughing the passer penalties or after the play penalties, things like that. So they need to cut back on those. Aaron Glenn's been pushing that. And, you know, accountability is such an overblown word, especially around here, but like there's been such a lack of it the last few years. And, you know, I said from the beginning, like the most impressive part of Aaron Glenn is it feels like that's who he is. He's going to hold people accountable. You know, he, something that a lot of guys have said that has just been interesting in the phrasing is like, he lays out the expectations for each person. and you're expected to meet those. And so if you're not, then they're going to get on to you kind of thing. So each guy goes into practice knowing what's expected of him and what he's supposed to do and what he's supposed to reach. And they seem to be responding to it. Like I keep trying to couch it by saying, like, almost every head coach, it's kind of hunky-dory in the beginning. Like, everybody's, oh, this is so much different than what we had last. Everybody was shitting on Adam Gase when Robert Saleh came in. Like, you know, and I'm sure it was the same with Bowles to Gase and Rex Ryan to Bowles and all that stuff. But I just think that, you know, if it doesn't lead to wins, then pretty quickly they'll be like, oh, he's too hard on us. This is such bullshit. Like, it could change quickly if you're not winning football games. If they're competitive, like, they're, nobody expects them to win the Super Bowl this year. If they're competitive and they're competing till the very end of games, I think it'll still be positive. But yeah, wins and losses ultimately decides culture. But Aaron Glenn is doing the right things this time of the year, whereas maybe they weren't last year at the very least.
All right, let's get into some position stuff. Starting in the backfield at the running back position, where it's quickly becoming, it's not a number one, Breece Hall, number two, Braylon Allen. It's more, hey, these guys are ones, right? 1A, 1B. How are you seeing that in the practices?
Yeah, it feels, to me, it feels like a delineation between Breece and Braylon and Isaiah Davis. So I still think he'll be a part of it, but it feels like the other two guys are just a head above. And Braylon just looks like an absolute stud. Like, I've talked about it on the pod. I raved about him all summer last year too, but he's taking a leap forward. He looks stronger, faster, more explosive, bigger, like all those things. He's still only 21 years old, which is crazy. So he's super
young. Is why he's bigger and stronger. Yeah. Because he's just legitimately growing still, right?
He is. And he's made of the right stuff. Like, he is apparently pushing to stay on special teams even as his role increases, because he just wants to contribute anywhere he can. He did miss Tuesday's practice with knee soreness. That was just like out of caution. And then they had a day off today. So I imagine he'll be back full go on Thursday. You don't like hearing that, but especially coming out of a physical practice. But he brings such a different dimension than Breece. I think he hits the holes when they open up harder. Like, I think Breece had some issues with that last year. I think he's gotten better in camp. By the way, I think Breece has been pretty good in camp. But Braylon looks like a better, like, all-around runner of the football. He looks like he can be a weapon in the passing game, which he really wasn't coming out of college, at least. I think the Jets talked about liking his hands, but I don't think he was considered a threat out of the backfield necessarily. But he's caught some balls and then put his feet in the dirt and ran the other way and hit holes and had some huge plays. The running blocking is a lot better, which is beneficial. He falls forward, which is, you know, what you need in a running back, especially a power running back who you want to get the short yardage stuff. Like, the third and shorts, they were not going to him really much at all last year. Like, he's a guy that should be getting the ball third, fourth, and short. Just hammer it with him or Justin Fields. And having both of those as options is really dangerous. And, you know, another layer to this is Aaron Glenn keeps emphasizing that he told Breece Hall that, like, we want to involve you in the passing game more. We want to split you out wide. We want to get you on the move. And so that will open up opportunities to have them both on the field a lot at the same time. Like, you know, we talk a lot about concerns we have a wide receiver, but if Breece Hall is essentially a wide receiver running back, then that negates some of that concern, because I think Breece is a pretty talented pass catcher, good after the catch, a lot of explosiveness. So if you get him out in space while having Braylon in the backfield, it allows you to do some, whether it's read options or giving Fields options both in the running game and passing game, that he can dump it off to Breece, or he can hand it off to Braylon, or he could, you know, throw it to Mason Taylor, who we'll get into, or Garrett Wilson. Like, there are options in the passing game. Maybe there's not as many down the field options as you would like, that you can, like, say, I'm banking on this guy being really good. But I think Braylon in this offense with this coaching staff, a year under his belt, you know, I think they got away from him pretty quick last year when they got away from the run, and so he's hard to get into a groove and things like that. He wasn't playing that well before that happened, but, like, they definitely got away from the run overall, and definitely from him. So I'm curious to see what the workload will be, but, like, I just think he's in for a huge, huge year if he can stay healthy.
Lou Giordano in the chat throwing out that a Braylon Fields tush push would be fun to watch, and that Braylon could probably push him through a concrete wall if needed. One other running back that I just haven't heard much, even though, you know, we did a little bit after the draft. Donovan Edwards was an undrafted free agent, a big name coming out of Michigan and all that. Have you gotten much of a look at him at all?
I haven't. We see the third string and fourth string guys. I haven't noticed him making many plays, honestly. Like, he hasn't really stood out to me. None of the running backs outside of the three guys, honestly, have really shown much. They had a guy, Zach Evans, who was on the Rams last year, who just, like, retired during camp. I'd noticed him a couple times, but not. They signed a guy, I'm blanking on his name, someone I hadn't really heard of, but it feels like they're going to stick with three running backs, and maybe the fourth they keep would be Andrew Beck as a fullback, unless Donovan Edwards comes out and has a really good preseason. He'd be a candidate for the practice squad, obviously, but yeah, none of these other running backs really have caught my eye so far. Like, it's still early for sure, but I have not. Donovan Edwards is someone I was keeping an eye out for, and I just haven't seen him making plays so far.
All right, receiver, another position where it seems like quickly things are kind of coming into clarity with this team, and not in a good way for Alan Lazard. But Josh Reynolds, clear number two, you're saying at this point?
Yeah, I think he's pretty locked in as the two. It was kind of like that in the spring, but you know, to the Lazard point, like, if it was viewed as a competition externally, I don't know if it was internally, and I don't know what Alan Lazard's role is here. If anything, it almost feels like he's taking snaps away from, like, these young guys that should be getting reps. Like, I think Tuesday was the first time I literally can remember him getting targeted at all by Justin Fields. He made a nice catch in the move the ball period down the field in a ball that was thrown a little behind him. Otherwise, he's just been absolutely invisible. I've seen him make a few drops in individual drills. I think he's got more reps with the second team than the first team, like with Tyrod. And I just, like, don't know what his role is on this team. Like, he doesn't play special teams. If you don't trust him, or if Justin Fields doesn't trust him in the passing game, are you really just going to keep a guy on the roster to be a blocker at wide receiver? Like, I don't know. Like, I'm less convinced he's, like, a lock to make the team now, just based on what if you're basing it purely on merit, I don't see why he's on the team. And, you know, in the article that I have out today, Tyler Johnson has kind of emerged, I think, as, like, their best option as their third receiver. He can move around the formation, so that allows you to get a creative with Garrett. He's not, like, especially explosive. He's not especially big. But Aaron Glenn went on this long, told a story about when the Lions played, I think when Tyler Johnson was on the Rams, maybe. I can't remember. But I guess Tyler Johnson, like, saw something that a defensive back was doing, and he exploited it, and he was able to get, like, a 60-yard reception. And Aaron Glenn's point was, like, he's really good at having feel for what the defensive backs want to do and exploiting that and making big plays, even though he's maybe not the fastest guy or most explosive, but he moves pretty well. He's caught a lot of balls. I think Justin Fields seems to trust him. So if I'm going top three receivers, like, today, if the season were to start tomorrow, it's Garrett, it's Josh Reynolds, it's Tyler Johnson, and fourth receiver, probably Lazard right now. You know, Arian Smith, I think they're trying to get him some reps with Fields and Tyrod Taylor. Corley has not had a good camp. Brandon Smith has. I don't think there's really any other. Oh, and Jamal Pritchett has had a pretty good camp for UDFA, but I don't see him being a factor in the offense. So, yeah, I think those top three, and then whoever, you know, Arian Smith is for sure sticking around. And then you have, like, the Corleys and Lazards of the world. But, you know, it's not the most exciting receiving group for sure. But Reynolds and Tyler Johnson have been in the NFL a while. They know what they're doing. So they're banking on, like, the veteran aspect of it more than, like, the potential, I would say.
And to your point, I mean, if Garrett's making explosive plays, and then if Breece Hall can make explosive plays, maybe there's enough. Maybe there's just enough of that to mix in. But yeah, not an electric receiving core. And then you could have Mason Taylor making some plays, right? The tight end. We coming into this, we weren't quite sure. Like, a rookie, obviously getting his feet wet, like, first training camp. Would he separate himself from Ruckert? Seems like he has quickly here over a week and a half, and he's going to be the guy.
Yeah, I mean, he's got a high ceiling. He already looks legit. I mean, the number one thing everybody always says is he's just really smart. He doesn't really make mistakes, like mental mistakes. And he's getting better. Like, I mean, Garrett Wilson said he's one of the, like, he thinks it's in terms of what he's able to do, in terms of moving, in terms of catching the ball, getting open, he's one of the better ones he's seen as a tight end. And you know, you've seen it. He had one drop on Tuesday, but he made up for it with, like, a great catch in the end zone at the end of the move the ball period from Justin Fields. The two of them are building chemistry. It just feels to me like he's only 20, or I think he turned 21 recently. So there's going to be growing pains for sure. Same with Membo at right tackle, I think, has had a good camp. We can get into him later. Mason Taylor, I've been really impressed, and I think he's the clear cut tight end one. And even like if we're talking like fantasy football, like, you know, Cole Kmet had quite a few targets from Justin Fields when they played together. I think Mason Taylor should have a Kmet type season as a rookie, which is pretty good. I think he had something like 700 yards or something the last time him and Fields played a full season together. So I think Taylor's going to have a big year. He's probably the number two or number three option in the passing game right now.
All right. And then you mentioned earlier in the show, Malachi Moore being impressive, thriving this week in pads. I just get more into that. As far as that said, what is his role at this point? Do you see it? Like, how much is he a part of this defense?
Yeah, you know, I mean, I've been saying since the beginning, I could see him being the starter in week one. I think they're making him earn it for sure. He hasn't really gotten a lot of like starter reps, but it's him and Tony Adams are competing. Adams has had a solid game, not like amazing or anything, but I mean, he's just a guy that once the pads came on and they were allowed to start hitting, he really started to shine because he's a hard hitting safety. They can move him over the formation. I think I noted it. Two tackles for loss he made, one on a running play, one on a screen to a receiver where he was just at the line and met them. I think he had a pass breakup. He was really good in that one-on-one tackling drill. And Aaron Glenn, when his name was mentioned, like Aaron Glenn like lit up talking about him, which is always and he tried couching it, but like, you know, he's not the starter. I'm not saying that. He's pushing for it though. But it just feels like whether it's week one or soon after that, he's their long-term starter at safety. I think he's going to wind up being a steal in the fourth round. And out of this rookie class, I mean, if you remove the first two round guys who are pretty locked in as starters from day one, like from round three onward, he's going to be the standout of this class as a rookie, I think, because he's going to have the chance to have a role right away. But yeah, he's been one of the big winners at camp so far, I would say.
All right, a couple more things before we get into the new kicker. Will McDonald, you heard, gained 15 pounds of muscle. You saw it early, right in the spring. It was clear that you know, this is a guy that is beefed up. Bases his game on speed. So one question I had at that point was, yes, it's better for the run game to be able to stop the run, but is it going to hurt him in the pass rush being a little bigger? And it sounds like, I think you said, ready to make the leap this week, it seems like.
Yeah, I mean, he, you know, I wrote this in my article. Like, it's funny to think about, I mean, Joe Douglas deserves credit for this pick, honestly. Like thinking back to our reaction and the fans' reaction and the media's reaction to them picking Will McDonald when defensive end was maybe their biggest strength on the roster at that time, or at least on paper it was. It obviously didn't wind up
being. Which I think we could still defend ourselves because of the roster at the time, right?
Yeah,
not
especially
the player, but the
especially
roster.
if they were trying to be a win now team, it didn't really make much sense. Their logic even at the time was, well, we're going to have a lot of big leads with Aaron Rodgers, so we're going to be rushing the passer more, which obviously that failed quickly when Rodgers got hurt. So, but the whole, it's kind of perfect that the fans were mad that the Steelers traded up right in front of them to get Broderick Jones. The Jets get Will McDonald. Those two guys are going to be facing off in week one, and Broderick Jones has been pretty bad for the Steelers so far. And Aaron Rodgers is the quarterback. They drafted Will McDonald because they had Aaron Rodgers. Like, it's a lot of layers to that, but you know, Will had a breakout last year. He was the breakout star of the season for them. In a bad year, he was like a star. He was better. He was at his best until Hassan Reddick came back. Like, just everything around Hassan Reddick, he just brought everybody down with him. But you know, Will, like, he has great length, speed, agility. That spin move is pretty unstoppable unless you like expect it. But he just needed to add another layer. Like, he was not good in run stopping, and he wasn't winning with power. And that was his big goal coming this offseason. I think he said he put on 15 pounds of muscle. First, he lost some of the fat, and then he put on muscle. So I don't know how much he gained in terms of, like, actual pounds, but he put on a lot of strength. You've seen it in camp, him bowling through Membo at one point. It has been a good matchup, but, like, he's won with power and strength. And Aaron Glenn's been preaching about how impressive he thinks he's been in terms of getting off his blocks, even in the running game. So, you know, if he can unlock that side of his game, he's going to be pretty unstoppable. And they need that because you don't know what you're going to get from Jermaine. You don't know what these backups are going to be. If Will McDonald can play most of the game, both, like, they don't have to take him out for running plays and things like that, and he can make an impact. Like, he's a Pro Bowler. He's a 12-sack guy. He's, you know, we're talking about, should they be signing him to an extension this upcoming offseason? Because he'll be eligible after his third year. So, and he's young. He's made of the right stuff. He's such an interesting guy. I know they did the behind the scenes documentary about his journey. He talked to us yesterday. He's he's just such an interesting individual. I wrote about him when he was drafted. I wrote a long story about his journey, which is crazy. He was sleeping in a car in a McDonald's parking lot at one point, just because he was trying to work while playing football. And he admits that he didn't even really watch football until like college. Like he didn't really watch the NFL at all. Cause he referenced like how he's always wanted to sack Aaron Rodgers. He's like, since I was a kid, he's like, well, not since I was a kid, I didn't really watch football when I was a kid, but I've wanted to sack Aaron Rodgers for a while. So, it feels like he's on the verge of something special. And in this defense and next to Quinnen Williams, like I'm pretty excited to see what that looks like this year.
And he'll get his chance to sack Aaron Rodgers. You probably won't be surprised, Zach, to learn that the chat has turned to Michael Clemens chatter. This one from Charles Henderson. Why is Michael Clemens still on the team? Did Aaron Glenn not watch the two games versus Buffalo last year? That's basically all you need to see. And then actually a little bit of defense from Taylor Delgado.
Yep.
Bad starter, but a good backup. Same deal with Ashton Davis. So at this point, I mean, they're not going to cut Clemens. Do you believe that, though? Do you believe in a smaller role he can be effective for this team?
I do. The problem was he got exposed with all the level of snaps he got last year because they did such a poor job with the depth. But he's Jermaine Johnson not being ready away from being the starter this year, so that would be the concern. But yeah, you can't cut him because he's frankly their best backup right now. Like the other defensive ends have not emerged. And, you know, in theory, if you only use him to stop the run or something like that, like he can be a fine rotational backup, but he played 600 snaps last year and that was way too many. He makes a lot of mistakes. Aaron Glenn raved about him, not to the degree that like Ulbrich or Saleh used to, but he did praise him. But he also acknowledged like he needs to cut back on those dumb penalties because that is his biggest flaw. It's just idiotic penalties and they need to get rid of those. And he was one of the biggest culprits on the roster. So that's why the fan base is not a huge fan of him. I don't think there's much he could do to win them back outside of just not making mistakes, but he's never going to be a fan favorite the way he was in the beginning when it was, you know, he was this big jack dude who'd show up with his shirt off and, you know, kind of jokingly
gave great quotes too, didn't he, at the podium, well, like weird,
like
quotes,
like scary, like, you know, one word quotes, but yeah, they were, he hasn't talked to the media in a minute, I would say, but he's not getting cut. So you guys can get that out of your head.
All right. It is now time for our newest game here on Flight Plan. Name the kickers between Nick Folk and Nick Folk as far as the Jets go. He's back.
Guys that have kicked in the regular season is the game.
Right. Yes. We're not counting practice squad guys, training camp guys, just guys who have actually stepped on the field in a real game for the Jets. Nick Folk was the Jets' steady, reliable kicker from 2010 to 2016. He's back with a chance to hopefully be that again at 40 years old. He'll be battling Mevis for the job. In between then and now, the Jets have had 15 kickers attempt a kick in a game, Zach. 15 kickers.
Yeah.
Can you name them all?
I don't think I can name them all, but I don't know. I'm curious to see how many I'll get. I was trying to think about it before in my head, and there's somewhere I like have it on the tip of my tongue. I cannot think of the freaking name, but
I wish I had more time to put together some graphics.
For I know. Oh, anyway, I did tell you this idea like 30 minutes ago. So.
Yeah, in my defense. All right, ready to go. I have them in chronological order. I'm not going to hold that.
Yeah, I'm not going to do that.
Fire them off at any rate. Go ahead.
All right, so we got. Guys, don't put it in the chat. Come on, I'm trying to guess.
Yeah, don't look at the chat, Zach. Don't look at the chat.
Yeah, jeez, guys, come on. All right, I'm gonna move the thing over. I knew those though. All right, Jason Myers, Chandler Catanzaro, Randy Bullock. Is he on the list?
No. No. Oh, sorry.
He wasn't. Well, he was on the
2015. Randy Bullock. 2015.
He was before.
So doesn't count. He did kick for the Jets, but that does not count. So,
damn.
Okay. You have two so far, one wrong.
Greg Zuerlein. Spencer Schrader. Greg Joseph. Kerr Vedvik. Sam Ficken. Chris Nagar. Did he kick in the regular season? N-A-G-A-R. He's a preseason guy.
You got seven so far. We got a long way to go.
Austin Siebert. Eddie Pinheiro, Anders Carlson.
That's 10.
I'm at 10. Oh, shit, this is where I'm falling off. Fuck. They had a guy who used to be on the Lions last year, and I'm blanking on his freaking name. Am I gonna die at the vine there? Let's see. Shit. Who else do we have? Oh, they never had Graham Gano. Fuck, I think that's all I got.
Okay.
Who'd I miss?
Pretty good. Okay. I'm trying to remember which ones you said. Jason Myers. Did you say Jason Myers?
Yeah, I said Jason.
You did. Okay. Chase McLaughlin.
No, I didn't say him.
Sergio Castillo. Alex Kessman.
Okay, I was not getting that one.
There's actually three in a row in 2020 and 2021.
Yeah, it was brutal.
Matt Amendola.
Matt Amendola.
And then I think the other one you missed was Riley Patterson, which is last year.
That was the one I was thinking of.
Last season, but he wasn't there for long.
Those were all pretty obscure ones. So
yeah.
I think I did pretty good.
I think so. Solid work. That was fun. Okay. Stock up, stock down.
Stock up, stock down.
Two of each. Let's start with stock up.
Yeah, stock up. Let's see, who was one of the ones I wanted to shout out? Oh, Jerry's Monroe. The safety. He was undrafted last year. He was a favorite of the last staff. Aaron Rodgers would shout him out a bunch. He got a chance at the end of last year, but Aaron Glenn went out of his way to shout him out on Monday. And I think he's been one of their better safeties in camp. Like I think he's carved out a role as a backup safety on the team. They need some depth there. I'd say as of now, he's probably like the fourth safety or the favorite to be that. And yeah, he's been a surprise one. He's not someone I had on my like radar coming in the offseason as someone to keep an eye on, but he's been pretty good.
One more up.
Yeah, one more. Let's see. I'll go. You know how somebody asked me to talk about him, so I'll say Armon Membo, honestly. I think he's been pretty good. His battles over the course of camp, he's done a much better job against Will McDonald. I think going against a guy like that with the length and the speed and the spin move, like it's a very unique player. He probably needs reps against other guys too. Like Jermaine would be great for him, I think, just as someone who also like uses power more and also has a level of creativity, because you're not going to see a lot of guys that are like Will McDonald because he's pretty unique. But I think going against him is going to be good. And I think he's going to be pretty good pretty early. I think Membo is going to go through his growing pains, especially in pass blocking. Like, you know, it may be penalties, like holding in the passing game might be an issue early, but I think he's going to be really good as a run blocker right away. I think being next to AVT helps him. And I've been impressed with him so far, is what I would say.
All right, sock down.
Sock down. I guess we got to start with Harrison Mevis, you know, who I put on my five most interesting guys, the thicker kicker. You know, I had my editor reach out to me recently about maybe writing a story about him. I would be surprised if Nick Folk didn't beat him out unless he has a really, really good rest of the camp. He's been fine. Like he hasn't missed a field goal in a couple of days, but yeah, I'd say he's stocked down. Lou Giordano just asked about Olu. He's been pretty solid too. I think a lot of times when you don't hear me talk about offensive linemen, it's a good thing because it means like they've been doing their job, and he's been solid. And other stock down, we already talked about Alan Lazard. I'll say Xavier Gibson, because he's a guy that had a lot to prove coming into this year. He had a bad year last year as a returner. Doesn't really add much as a receiver. And he's muffed a couple of punts that I've noticed. And Jamal Pritchett's on his tail. Pritchett's made more plays in team drills. So Gibson, somebody I would say is on thin ice. He's still probably the early favorite to be the punt returner just out of experience, and he's had some success. But, you know, this is a new staff. Don't have ties to him. And if I was making a 53 projection right now, I don't know if I would have him on it.
All right. Yeah, it seems like things have just kind of turned as far as his his star. Okay, MVP from the chat this week. This is a new game we're playing as well. It's going to be Lou Giordano, who has been stepping up lately. But I give it to him because he's really pushing to get the chat a name. So he threw out air marshals. Not bad. Flight attendants, co-pilots,
Flight attendants isn't bad.
Flight crew, but then somebody mentioned that's the cheerleaders. And then Mile High Club. Somebody mentioned that maybe a more of a Denver Broncos thing. I like that one too. So we do need to throw some of these in somewhere.
Or maybe like the like the cabin, because you know they call the like cabin where the you know the guests, I don't know, the people who fly on the plane.
Coach. Yeah. Are we first class?
We're not first class.
I think we should put
economy. Basic economy is our fan base. Yeah.
We should put it on us that by the time the regular season starts, we have this name set in stone going forward.
I like it.
All right. This has been a good one. This is it for us this week. We'll be back next week. Of course, if you haven't, get your tickets for Badlands, the show coming up August 23rd. I believe tickets still available. I'll be there. Zach will be there. I think both Connors will be there. The whole Badlands crew. Should be a lot of fun. So get your tickets for that live event. I think it's 4 to 7 on a Saturday.
Also want to give a shout out to Joe, the boss man, because he just had, I believe, a second kid. His wife.
Oh, really? I didn't even know.
I believe yesterday. Yeah. So congrats to Joe if you're listening. And
child was born, and then he did a podcast later in the day.
I'm sure he did, knowing Joe. Maybe he did it from the emergency room. I don't know, or the hospital. Sorry.
I will say, I mean, we do 2 a week during the season. I don't know how they do the prolific.
It's not stop.
I mean, it's not like, I mean, Joe has a real job too. So
yeah, exactly.
All right. Thanks everybody for joining us. We'll talk to everybody again next week on the Flight Plan Podcast.